This week, in defense of appendant organizations, settling the competition with the lodges. Are the Shriners really stealing our Blue Lodge members? Does the Scottish Rite scout out good ritualists and steal them away? Does the Blue Lodge resent all the other organizations? We'll answer that in a new paper from Brother William Boyd. Then, the wildly bizarre tale of William Wirt, the anti-Masonic's party choice to run for president, who was a brother? We'll hear about it in part one of this week's Masonic Minute with illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison. Then, we'll reminisce a little bit about some of my feelings in relation to going to Grand Lodge sessions. Maybe we're not going. And we'll wrap it up with a great piece on Platonic idealism and why it matters right now in this moment of history. All that and more, stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 465. Maybe you listened to the bumper of the episode and thought, hey, wait a second, Robert was supposed to have on Brother Angel Millar come on the show this week. And you're right. It seems like every time I announce I'm going to have a guest on in the following week, something happens. Well, Angel and I had some schedule conflicts, so we're going to try and record the episode in just a couple days. Hopefully, we'll have talked, and we'll get that episode up just as soon as possible. But to make up for that, this week, as you heard, we've got some great content coming. In the news this week, I did want to go ahead and mention just a couple things because I know some people are asking about it, and I have not forgotten. Number one, when will we do the episode with Ben Williams about Mormonism and Freemasonry? And we're going to have a special guest on that episode as well. A brother of the Mormon faith will be joining, so there will be some critical insight coming direct from some first-hand accounts to talk about this. As much as they can, we won't put them on the spot, but it is going to be a really great episode. Secondly, I've had numerous conversations with Brother Ben Williams, and we want to go ahead and tackle the idea of the Knight Templar origins and its connection to Freemasonry. Is there a connection? Many people say yes. We've got the books by John J. Robinson and many others who claim a lineage of Freemasonry that stems out of, you know, the Sinclairs or of Knight Templars and what have you. My position is that I do not believe there is a direct lineage between the craft as we practice it today and the Knight Templar. Ben Williams has stated in episode, I think, number one of his podcast, he gave a speech on the Knight Templars and Freemasonry and possible connections. So we'll probably dive into that as well, and we'll have some additional context in the form of perhaps some formidable experts on the topic. So that'll be more of a debate episode that we're going to try out here sometime in the future. Just waiting on schedules to clear up. You know, Ben's in law school. I'm in business school. So we just have to wait for the right time for a lot of this to come up. So please don't get frustrated. Please hang tight. It will happen. I promise. Just some updates on MasonicCon Chicago. If you were an attendee of MasonicCon Chicago, either digitally or in person, you should have gotten an email, an automated email, that came to you which asked you to create a username and a password for MasonicConChicago.com, which is where you can watch all of the presentations. You'll have to sign in to view them because they are exclusively yours to watch for the next 11 months. Please don't share them because that is not equitable. You paid for exclusive access. And we want to maintain that integrity. So, to that end, I would just say that if you haven't gotten access yet, please go to the website and click on Presentation Archive, and you'll see something at the bottom that says, not a member, click here to join or whatever, and it should shoot us a message and allow me to click yes. And I just verify you had a ticket, and once I do that, you should have access. We do have a limited, very limited number of extra coins and lapel pins for MasonicCon Chicago. If that interests you, if you would like to own a piece of history, go to MasonicConChicago.com, click on shop, and you can either buy the pin, the coin, or both. If you buy both, I take $2 off the cost, and of course, it's the same shipping price, so it's a little bonus there. We just want to make sure everybody gets a chance to buy them. So again, we have very limited, less than 50 left. Now, before we jump right into the education, we need to do our due diligence and thank all of our producers, all of our fellows, all of our contributors for all of the help that they've given the show over the years, over the months, over the weeks. We cannot do this without you. You're the reason for the Masonic education that is coming week after week, and been doing this show since 2011, if you can believe that, almost 10 years, and we've got over 460 episodes. That's incredible. But in order to keep all of those episodes up for you all the time, we need that kind of monetary assistance, so that we don't have to cut off a chunk of the episodes and say members only or whatever. That's a great model to do and to, build up the coffers a little bit to help out, but I would much rather just ask you all to help and, really appreciate it when you can do that. So if you want to learn about how to help this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on support the show and see how you can do that. Now, let's get into this week's education. Now, in the past, there have been many articles written about the appendant bodies, the appendant organizations. Do away with them because everything you need is in the Blue Lodge, the Symbolic Lodge, the Andy Hammer model. We've got people saying things like Blue Lodge first, or my brother Scott Duvall has said, well, if you want Blue Lodge to be amazing, you need to make Blue Lodge amazing, vote with your feet, and go wherever the heck you want to go. Don't hold it against a brother if he decides to go on to the shrine or decides to go on somewhere else. Now, I had a paper submission called Living the Journey, and it is by Brother William Boyd, a past master and senior warden, Valley High Lodge, number 1407 in San Antonio, Texas. He's also a member of Helots Lodge, number 1429 in Helots, Texas, or maybe it's Helots, Texas. Somerset Lodge, 1205 in Somerset, Texas as well. So this guy's been around the block, and he wrote this paper. Again, it's called In Defense of Appendant Organizations, Settling the Competition with the Lodges. And I'm really excited to read this, you guys. I hope you guys find it edifying. Let's dive right in right now. Who will speak openly in defense of appendant organizations? Who will justify organizations that lure our active brothers from our lodges when our lodges are in need of attention and assistance? This is a common charge I hear against appendant organizations, and I will make the case in defense of these Masonic organizations. Let me be upfront with one point. I do not like the term appendant bodies as we use it today. The term appendant connotes appendages that hang off the main body and may or may not be crucial to the survival of the host. In contemporary use, we include York Rite, Scottish Rite, and the Order of the Knights Templar in this catch-all term, and it is this usage to which I object. I would prefer to refer to the Blue Lodges, Scottish Rite, York Rite, and Order of Knights Templar as the Masonic bodies, and all of the other organizations as exactly that, Masonic organizations. I think this properly delineates their roles and positions relative to the main body of Masonry. Now, armed with the filter through which I view this matter, it's on to the point of this discussion. We each arrived at the West Gate with varying levels of knowledge of what laid beyond. It was our choice. We were the ones in search, and we alone made the decision to knock upon the door. We were curious, and we were exhilarated by the possibilities that waited. Once we entered, we discovered we had not arrived at a destination. Rather, we were at the beginning of a journey, our journey of our own self-discovery and improvement. We absorbed the lessons the Blue Lodge provide, and these are lessons filled with hints and clues to more doors and more lessons beyond. If we paid very close attention, the lessons provided through the third degree told us explicitly the Masonic story continued beyond what we would be able to experience in our Blue Lodge. Once we completed our lessons from those first three foundational degrees, we found ourselves at the very first fork in a road of our individual journeys. Some of us found our Masonic hearts and souls in Lodge, instructing, conferring degrees, going through the line, and administering to the brethren. Others of us, however, were searching for something else, more of the story, the meaning behind the story, and how we might apply our newly acquired knowledge to our lives in an increasingly complex and fast-paced society. We learned there are other, additional Masonic bodies that provide additional lessons and build upon what we learned in our Blue Lodge. More pieces of the mosaic. For a growing number of men arriving at our West Gate today, the story and the associated lessons are basis of their journeys from the very first lesson experienced by way of the first degree, all the way through to the final lesson offered through the several Masonic bodies. It is an undeniable desire of many brothers to gather more of the story, adding pieces to the Masonic mosaic as they are drawn along the path that eventually takes them to and through the remaining Masonic bodies. It is how brothers meet new brothers and expand their Masonic network and universe as they go. This, my brothers, is the essence of traveling. The York Rite, the Scottish Rite, and the Order of the Knights Templar provide those necessary lessons that complete the Masonic mosaic that we represent through the quote-unquote story. It is through this cumulative, allegorical story that we learn, understand, and relate our lessons. My brethren, the only way to receive those lessons is through the degree work offered by those Masonic bodies. This brings me to a question at the heart of the debate over the role of the Masonic bodies and Masonic organizations. Is Masonry about the Blue Lodge, or is it about the Mason? This question is not without controversy or emotion, but the answer I must embrace helps us properly place the quote-unquote appended bodies within the fraternity. If Masonry itself, as a fraternal organization, is about the Blue Lodge, it then is about the construction and maintenance of the basic infrastructure we provide to induct new Masons and inculcate the three essential Masonic lessons. We invest much of our time, labor, and love in this effort because we understand the unquestionable need of a functioning West Gate. It is our home. It is where we and our worthy brothers enter into the craft. It is, in fact, our first unifying experience when we meet our new brothers upon the level. If, on the other hand, Masonry is about the Mason, it then is about the story and the Mason's journey. It is about the ways and means for the Mason to receive the lessons and effect changes in his life and philosophy. As he assembles his Masonic mosaic, it is about the personal and fraternal connections the Mason makes along the way, continually growing and nurturing his personal Masonic universe and knowledge. Finally, it's about the Mason's relationship with his Creator and with mankind, his role, his responsibilities, and his fidelity. I submit to you that the answer must be that it is about both, and that the two philosophies are inseparable. While our Blue Lodges are our common bond within and across the fraternity, they are indispensable in the life and continuation of Freemasonry itself. And the Mason, through his journey, is indispensable in growing and nurturing the fraternity through gaining and sharing knowledge, exhibiting his passions, and exciting the imagination of his brothers. Within the natural order of our fraternity, we have brethren who find their Masonic soul and home within the Blue Lodge and may not fully understand why some brothers have a natural urge to travel. We also have brethren with that innate curiosity that leads them to travel, and may not understand why other brothers are satisfied by their love of the Lodge and the reward that Blue Lodge has to offer. Here, then, is the root of a perceived competition between our Lodges and other Masonic bodies. Because neither of these beliefs or preferences is wrong, nor is one more correct than the other, our charge must be to marry these philosophical approaches to the ultimate benefit of all Masonry. We see, and have seen, that when a brother's thirst for Masonic substance goes unfulfilled, they eventually wander off in pursuit of satisfaction. It is how the Lodges react and address these cases that determine the effect on the Lodges. Those who choose to travel and whose increased knowledge and additional experiences are put to work in the Lodge are likely to feel immediate value and experience tangible benefits from their journey and from the application of their new lessons. However, Those who travel and do not find a way to apply their knowledge and experiences within a Blue Lodge are likely to increase their participation in other Masonic bodies while reducing their participation in the lodges. I would offer this simple but significant example. Some brothers who have experienced the York and or Scottish Rite degrees are often eager to explain and discuss the esoteric meaning of the three Blue Lodge degrees with candidates, increasing their appreciation for their lessons and exciting their passion for learning. Brothers bringing this type of experience to Lodge, along with a passion for learning and sharing information, provide the Lodge with potential mentors to excite new Masons and stimulate curiosity among the Lodge members. Lodges stand to reap great rewards by engaging their traveling brothers and fitting their talents into the critical work of the Lodges. But, and this is important, it is also true that you may not know what a traveling brother may have or want to contribute, or even the length of his cable toe until you ask. After much thought on this matter, I submit that we do not really have a question of whether appendant bodies harm the lodges, or whether there should or should not be appendant organizations. I propose that what we do have is a challenge to acknowledge and effectively manage the equities between the brethren, the lodges, and the Masonic bodies to share the benefits that each contribute to Masonry. We need the full corpus of Masonry going forward, as one fraternity with several distinct bodies which complement each other with lessons, knowledge, opportunities, and rewards for the brothers who choose to travel. It is up to each Mason how he applies his knowledge, tools, and time, and it's up to the lodges to effectively utilize the knowledge, tools, and time that the traveling brothers have to offer. If we resolve the perceived competition between lodges and the other Masonic bodies, we will, at the same time, strengthen the corpus of Masonry, even as we are challenged by an unpredictable future. Be safe, my brethren, and remember, always reach beyond your grasp. I remain sincerely and fraternally yours, Brother William Boyd. Wow. What an incredible piece. From the get-go, when Brother Boyd says he doesn't like the term appendant bodies, I thought, really? Why not? And his reckoning for this is appropriate. When a body goes into, let's say, hypothermia, all the blood, the reason why fingers go black and toes and stuff fall off is because the lack of blood is staying away from the extremities. It stays away from the parts of the body that are not necessary, and instead crowd around the necessary life-giving organs, right? So to call these organizations appendages, it basically says that when the going gets tough, they must drop off. And we've talked about allegorical representations of the bodies in past episodes, and we've made this same corollary. So, great point here. I feel like the overwhelming message of this is that, number one, there's no competition between these lodges. But again, I feel like there is still competition because, in a way, we're competitive for the brother's time and his efforts. As somebody who's active in Freemasonry, I can tell you that... What am I saying? I can tell you. If you're listening to this, the chances are you're probably a super active brother anyway, or you listen to this show because you're not able to be as active as you want to be. The point is, I'm speaking to the choir. You know how many organizations are tapping you right now. You know that you're probably running a raffle. You're probably selling onions for the shrine. You're probably the secretary of some organization. And you're probably trying to figure out how to work degrees during COVID or manage how to keep people going and enthusiastic and all of this during a time of slowed work. So I think there is still some competition. And maybe right now, it's worse than ever. Or maybe it isn't. This paper really gave me a lot to think about. Certainly, I agree that each organization, if they were to tap on every single brother, there would be enough help to go around, and maybe it wouldn't just be this 1% of Freemasons doing everything. Podcasting, degrees, running lodges, whether you're the secretary or an executive officer, a treasurer, master, warden, a Grand Lodge committeeman that gets no rest. Maybe if our organizations weren't afraid to tap you on the shoulder and say, what's your expertise? Are you willing to serve? If they did that to everybody, I'm sure of it, that we would have enough brothers to fill the roles so that you spread the wealth, spread the labor, right? Many hands make light work. And this is leveraging the talents of everybody. And when this happens, now there really isn't competition because... aha! Because now we've filled the roles of how we need to fill them by asking brothers to fill a role in one organization that they don't fill in another because somebody else has been tapped to do that in that organization, and now there really isn't any competition. We can just focus on quality work. Who can best work and best agree? Something to think about. Well, Brother William Boyd, I want to thank you for this paper. Absolutely on point. All right, now before we get into our next piece, we've got part one of a great Masonic Minute coming right up. Let's give a listen.
He was a fellow craft and perhaps even a master mason. An enigma of a 19th century man whose strange story even spills over into the 21st century. Born in 1772, William Wirt became an attorney practicing in Richmond, Virginia. In 1807, President Jefferson appointed him prosecutor in Aaron Burr's treason trial. There, he gained a reputation as a great orator, and the high-profile event greatly extended his fame. Back in Richmond, his political career began in 1808 as a member of the Virginia House of Delegates, and later he served as a district attorney. In 1817, U.S. President James Monroe, a Freemason, appointed him as Attorney General of the United States. He served in that position for over 11 years into the term of John Quincy Adams, a notorious opponent of the craft. History credits him with greatly increasing the significance of that office. The infamous Morgan Affair of 1826 spawned sentiment against Freemasonry that grew to a nationwide level. And in 1832, it led to the formation of the country's first third political party, the Anti-Masonic Party. The party approached Brother Henry Clay to be its presidential candidate. Clay turned them down with his famous quote, "I would not denounce or renounce Freemasonry, even in order to become President of the United States." With Clay's rejection, the anti-Masons turned to Wirt, who accepted. Wirt was initiated and passed in 1801 in Richmond's Jerusalem Lodge No. 54. He claimed never to have been raised, but the records of Virginia's Stevensburg Lodge 40 list a William Wirt as a Master Mason in 1803. At the nominating convention, Wirt surprised delegates by refusing to condemn the fraternity, telling them, "I was myself initiated into the mysteries of Freemasonry. I never took the master's degree, but it proceeded from no suspicion on my part that there was anything criminal in the institution, or anything that placed its members in the slightest degree in collision with their allegiance to their country and its laws. I have thought and repeatedly said that I considered Masonry as having nothing to do with politics, and nothing has surprised me more than to see it blown into consequence." In other words, at the convention, where the anti-Masonic party nominated him as its presidential candidate, he spoke in defense of Freemasonry. The incumbent president, Brother Andrew Jackson, won the election, with Wirt winning the state of Vermont and its 7 electoral votes. So in a twist, we learn that William Wirt, who ran for president on the anti-Masonic ticket, was in fact a member of the fraternity who spoke in defense of his experience as a Mason. That alone is baffling and strange. But Wirt's story isn't over. Before it's over, the account of William Wirt goes from the strange to the downright bizarre. We'll talk about that next time. In the meantime, for the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right. As always, amazing with illustrious Brother Harrison. You know, we got to see and hear illustrious Brother Harrison give his amazing presentation, Clash of the Titans, never to be made public, by the way, at MasonicCon Chicago. You know, he's only given that presentation a handful of other times, and I mean a handful. I know he gave it at the Valley of St. Louis, where I first heard it through a Zoom meeting, and, you know, guys, it's really incredible, and it's probably, I think it was one of the top presentations of the weekend, rated by the attendees, both virtual and in person. Now, if we're going to go about this the right way, we're not going to hear from Steve next week unless he sends the file, and in which case I'm going to run it. But if he doesn't, you'll hear the conclusion of this part in episode number 467. Again, unless he sends it to me sooner. If you enjoy this kind of content, please head on over to wcypodcast.com, click subscribe because there's a video that goes along with this, and illustrious Brother Harrison goes ahead and he puts those together for us. Also, while you're at it, these videos go up on his YouTube as well, so you can find the 1 Minute Mason and check it out. William Wirt, what a strange fellow, and Steve really nails it when he says, how crazy is this story? But wait, there's more. Steve Harrison with the Billy Mays moment. Stay tuned next week for more on that. But we've got more education this week, so let's go ahead and get right into the next piece. Just as an extra, I wanted to read a piece that I wrote for the Midnight Freemasons that was published just a few days ago. It's called A Train Ride That Isn't Happening. Last year, about this time, I was scrambling to get ahead podcasting, writing, and anything else that I could schedule to be released via the web while I would be in Springfield, Illinois. Why would I be in Springfield? Because ever since 2013, I have gone to Grand Lodge sessions in Illinois every year. It's always the first Friday and Saturday after the first Tuesday in October of each year. I know that's really a weird rule. Well, we're getting to that. We're really close to that date right now. Except this year, it isn't happening. You see, for the past 3 years, I've packed my overnight bag, grabbed a deck of cards, and bought a nice bottle of pick your poison, and hopped on a metro train to Union Station in Chicago, and from there, boarded the Amtrak on business class ticket to Springfield, Illinois. Once there, we walked 2 blocks to the Abraham Lincoln Hotel, right across from the convention center where the Grand Lodge of Illinois holds its annual meetings. This year, the Grand Lodge sessions will be held virtually due to the COVID-19 pandemic. On the plus side, I don't have to take 2 days off of work. Actually, I don't know if that's a plus. I rather enjoy taking those days off and spending them with my brothers, my best friends in the whole world. Yep, I'll be a regular working stiff that Thursday and Friday. Now, I know there are a lot of brothers who can't attend Grand Lodge sessions regularly, but for me, I do. And this whole thing just sucks. Perhaps, however, we can make the best of it. I'll gather together with Scott, Spencer, and Julian, and maybe we can go out to dinner on Friday night. We can sit around the table and share war stories, our hopes, our dreams, and speculate on what the first ever virtual Grand Lodge sessions will accomplish. Perhaps on Saturday evening, after the news trickles out on what we've decided to do in terms of the previous and upcoming Masonic year, we can go grab some pizza and have a few beers. You know, make the best out of a weird situation. As I sit and type this, I'm starting to have a bit of a revelation. Maybe it's not the Grand Lodge sessions that I'm sad about missing. Yep, it's definitely not the sessions. Endless introductions, reports that are approved before they're ever read, and the most meaningful things that could be read aren't. Grand orations, the report on the Committee of Masonic Education, celebrating our best and brightest secretaries, brothers, and educators. Maybe what I feel like I'll be missing is a gently rocking Amtrak train, business class, the finest microwavable club car delicacies, spicy Masonic memes, intellectual conversations, and a laughter that seems to echo in my head even now. Ooh-wee! And that Amtrak Wi-Fi. It ain't all that bad. Yeah, this year is going to be a little different. Each year, the trip home from Springfield on the Amtrak seems to feel, for me anyway, like someone dying. I remember, as an only child, growing up in a home with a single mom. We lived in the Midwest, and my entire family and all my friends were in California. My mother, in her infinite wisdom, and I am not being facetious here, that she moved us to Illinois to get away from the hustle and bustle of the West Coast. Of course, my friends could never fly back to see me. Well, there was this one time my friend Chris came out to visit. They stayed for about 5 hours or so. But that was it. But when they left, it always felt so strange. Like something had been not taken away, but erased. Erased, but somehow I still knew something was missing. It wasn't exactly sadness. I suppose the adult in me would use the word melancholy. A sort of black and blue bruise to the child within. A real hit. The words, here we go. Back to normal. I think that's probably normal for a kid, though. You're connected. You're present, living in the moment. You don't have grown-up distractions. For now, I'll just daydream. Remembering what it felt like to get up at ungodly hours in October, the sun charring some other place just east of wherever I was. A cool dampness at the train station, hopping on and watching the strobe of jade as we rocked along the metro tracks, streetlights filtering through the green windows. Arriving at Union Station, stepping out into the Grand Hall, breathtaking. So magnificent, in fact, you almost forget that you just walked a mile, or what seemed like it, with a metric ton of luggage. Walking into the business class lounge and seeing your friends, your brothers, waiting for you. Maybe next year, when we travel to Grand Lodge sessions, I hope we'll be back to normal by then. I'll find the time to slap two more Instamatic picture stickers on the convention center's podium that the Grandmaster uses every year. One for this year, and one for the next. Robert Johnson. So here we are, in the midst of September. Election season, we're all getting a little, well, tired. Or maybe we're getting energized. I don't know. One thing's for sure, it does seem odd out there, and questions about our own personal realities keep popping up. You know, these are really odd questions of philosophical value for self-reflection and all of these things. And just a few days ago, 9 days ago to be precise, at the time of recording this, the Masonic Philosophical Society writer Joe published a piece called Platonic Idealism. And I thought, after I read it, I had to share it with you guys. Here we go. Platonic Idealism by MPS writer Joe, September 21st, 2020. In 1998's The Truman Show, the titular character played by Jim Carrey lives in the fictitious world of Sea Haven. It's an idyllic, quaint coastal town with bustling businesses and friendly faces. It's the world Truman has known since his birth. Yet unbeknownst to him, his entire life is an elaborate ruse, a joke. Everyone is in on but him. He's the star of the world's most popular show, the ultimate in reality television. Everyone he knows, from his mother and father through to his wife, is an actor. When asked why Truman has never realized the truth behind his life, the show's creator remarks, quote, "We accept the reality of the world with which we are presented. It's as simple as that," end quote. In doing so, he evoked an ancient pillar of Western philosophy, Platonic idealism. Indeed, the story of Truman's life mirrors Plato's famous tale of the cave. In the cave, we find a group of people chained up. They face forward, unable to move. They spend their entire lives staring at a wall upon which is blank, shadowy images dance. One day a man breaks free. He ventures up out of the cave, discovering a great fire with a platform in front, upon which people walked, carrying objects, the source of the images. Eventually reaching the mouth of the cave, the man is blinded by the power of the sun. The story has a melancholy ending. Having discovered the truth about the world, the man returns to free the others. However, unable to describe the real world and convince them of the truth, the people murder him instead. The idea described in these stories is simple. You can't trust the world you perceive, the world of sensory perception. Here, Plato distinguished between two worlds. The first was our world, ever-changing. The second world was of world of forms, where the perfect idea, or form, of everything existed. Our world, the first, was a mere shadow. Take a house, for example. Each has a door, or a few, several windows, a roof of a specific style, and walls made of a particular material. Each is as different as the last. No two are the same, even if their first appearance suggests otherwise. However, Plato would contend that the house is an ideal of which each of us is aware. Through this ideal, we can identify the imperfect reflections which line our streets. Perfect versions of all objects exist in the world of forms, but not all that exists there is equal. Plato drew a dividing line above which is the form of the good, and below which is everything else. It is through this form that all others are realized. Only a philosopher could understand or perceive this endless, changeless form of the good. Many have criticized Platonic idealism for the blurry line between things which have form and those which do not. Does every person have a perfect representation of every ethnicity? Or is just each species or each gender? Despite such criticism, Platonic idealism found success in mathematics. No perfect triangle has ever existed, yet we know what it would be. Three angles equal to 180 degrees. Still, it raises interesting and persistent ideas about reality. How do we know what is real? What makes a particular object that object? Does the world shift with our words or perceptions? As Plato said, reality is created by the mind. We can change our reality by changing our mind. And it is with this idea that I want to give hope to anybody listening right now in this immense, wild political world we're living in, that there's a lot of shadows being cast by political parties and all of these things. And I just want everybody to know that you're not alone out there if you're feeling like icky about stuff. And a lot of it has to do with perception and how we can change our minds and change our worlds and change our experience by choosing to understand that everything that's written about, everything that's said, everything you watch is from one vantage point, either a reporter's or your own. And do we know the other side? It's important to remain as objective as possible while maintaining your own personal values. So take that for what it's worth, and I hope that you find some inspiration in what I'm trying to tell you. I know that when I read this piece, I felt a little bit more at ease with a lot of the things that are going on in today's world, whether it's political or maybe it's just, you know, your job or your lack of a job right now or whatever it is. You know, we're all going through some rough times. So I just want everybody out there to remember maybe there's something to this idea of Platonic idealism. This came out at a really great time. So if you want to learn more about the Masonic Philosophical Society, head on over to their website. I'll put a link in the show notes. Great website, great blog, great writers. And they always ask some really pertinent questions. I think they ask really progressive questions. You know, we're always writing about things like the level, the tools in masonry, old ritual and history. But I don't see a whole lot of guts when we try to take Masonic principles and apply them to humanity today. This website does quite often, and I applaud them for that. So if that kind of interests you, check that out. I might also interest you to check out a side project, a couple of which I've put together over the last few years. One is called The Civic Freemason. You can check them out, civicfreemason.com. There's a link to it on our website, wcypodcast.com. And also, there are a couple other projects there. Masonic Legacy Society is one, and maybe another one, Wilmshurst University. But anyway, check those out. See what you think. If you've got questions, email me, wcypodcast@gmail.com. I will get back to you just as soon as I can. If you go to our website, you can fill out a contact form there, too, if you can't remember. And that's just fine. I'll get back to you again. I answer all my emails. Sometimes it just takes me a few. Again, I am, you know, working full-time, family, school, podcasting, all of these amazing things that we all do. We're all busy. So I want to thank our producers, fellows, and contributors one more time before we close out this week. I hope you had a great week last week. I hope you have a great week coming up, and we'll talk to you all next week. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.